I began this morning by putting a picture up of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Many of you may know who that is, a familiar German theologian. He was very famous, particularly during the World War II period. In World War II, he found himself in the United States, free of what was taking place in his home country. He decided that if he was going to deal with his people and be of service to his people in the aftermath of World War II, that it would be necessary for him to experience the war firsthand. And so he voluntarily left this country, went back to Nazi Germany, and was arrested. He spent the rest of his life in prison, and ultimately only about 2 weeks before Germany fell, Hitler ordered that he be executed, and he lost his life in that situation. One of the books that is very famous that he's produced or that he wrote was a book called Letters and Papers from Prison. And if you haven't read that, it's an inspiring kind of presentation. One of the things that's so particularly useful, though, as you look at it, is you have to wonder, where did these documents or how did these documents become public? And the reality is that there were Nazi guards who smuggled these documents out of that prison situation, literally risking their own lives because they knew Bonhoeffer and they knew the things that he was sharing. And fortunately for us, those documents have survived. When I think of prison and jail, there are situations in Scripture where we find people in those kind of circumstances. Certainly Joseph is in that circumstance. But I tell you what, guys, let's just kill it, okay? Just put it on one and leave it, and we'll just do without it today. I'm thinking particularly, though, about the Philippian jailer in Acts chapter 16. Paul and Silas are in the city of Philippi. They come across a young woman who has the ability to predict the future because she has an evil spirit. And Paul sees her a number of times, and then finally just says, "I'm going to heal her," and she does. And he does. He does that. And of course, the people who are receiving money because of what she's able to do are very unhappy with him. Paul and Silas are dragged into the court. They're beaten and put in jail. And you probably know that about midnight, they're singing praises to God. There's an earthquake, and all of the prison is wide open. The jailer's going to kill himself because he's failed in his task. And Paul says, "No, don't do that. We're all here." And he comes in and says, "Brethren, what do I have to do? What do I need to do to be saved?" He recognizes that there's this incredible power that's taking place there. And later that night, he and his household are baptized. He takes Paul and Silas away from the prison. And probably if you could talk to that jailer, he might say, "Well, I helped with the freedom that these two men needed." And yet if you talk to Paul, he would have said, "No, we provided the freedom that comes from Jesus Christ." There's literally, we do have freedom. And Luke chapter 4, verse 8, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because He has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of the sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free." God's plan for us is that we escape the boundaries, that we escape from prison, that we escape from jail, and that we live the life of freedom that Jesus has brought to us. I read a little book not too long ago, and the author made the point in the book that oftentimes we create our own jails, and we become our own jailers. Prisons that we build literally on the inside, and then we find ourselves trapped. And although God calls us to freedom and gives us freedom and promises us freedom, we sometimes, in the living of our own lives, we create these places of restriction. And this morning, I'd like to very quickly look at four prisons that we build in life that we could easily take down. And this morning, I'd like for you to think carefully about these four, if you would. You may find that you relate to one of them or maybe to more than one of them. And it may be a place that you need to work in your life to remove that particular restriction that's taking place. The first one I would mention is guilt. Let me share with you a little story. The scene was San Diego Superior Court. Two men were on trial for armed robbery. An eyewitness took the stand, and the prosecutor moved carefully. "So you say you were at the scene when the robbery took place?" "Yes." "And you saw a vehicle leave at a high rate of speed? "Yes." "And did you observe the occupants?" "Yes, two men." And the prosecutor boomed, "Are those two men present in court today?" And the two defendants raised their hands. They obviously didn't have any hope of escaping the charges at that particular point in time. They were guilty. And I don't know if they just weren't thinking clearly, or maybe if the guilt just overwhelmed them at that particular moment. There are plenty of situations where you see people respond in similar kinds of ways. We give away our guilt. We feel a lot of guilt. And invariably, people say, "Well, I know that God has forgiven me, but I haven't forgiven myself. How do I forgive myself?" And that becomes the challenge, because all of us have done things that are wrong in our life. And probably on a regular basis, we come into contact with the consequences of that behavior. And we don't like dealing with those consequences. And it reminds us of the things we've done wrong. It reminds us of the sin that's in our lives. And yet we can constantly, as Christians, be reminded of the fact that God has freed us from that guilt. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery." Satan wants you to focus on the guilt. Satan knows that the more guilty you feel, the tendency is to withdraw from God, move further away from God. And when you're further away from God, you're a better target for him. And so he wants us to do that. God says, "Bring your guilt and let me deal with it. Bring your guilt and let me wash it away. Let me take care of it. Come closer to me. Don't go away." And when we build these prison rooms with the guilt from our life, God is encouraging us to do something totally different with that guilt. Little boy was visiting at his parents' house, or his grandparents' house, rather, had a slingshot, and a little boy was trying to, you know, shoot various things around the farm, and he shot and killed a duck. And his little sister saw him do this. And for the next few days, she put him through misery. Grandma would say, "Sally, why don't you help me with the dishes?" And she'd say, "Oh, my brother would rather help you." And he would look kind of stunned, and she'd say, "Remember the duck." You know, and so she had this leverage on him. Now, finally, the little boy came to the grandmother and said, "I have to tell you the truth. You know, I killed the duck." And the grandmother said, "I know it. I saw you do it. I forgave you of it at the time. And I wondered how long you were going to be Sally's slave." And that's exactly the role that Satan plays in our lives. He constantly is mentioning to us, "Don't forget the things you've done wrong." And when we finally take it to God, he says, "I wondered how long you were going to be overwhelmed by the guilt that's in your life. Give it up. Give it away." The second one is pride. When the Cornerstone Bank in Waco, Nebraska was robbed of some $6,000 in November of 2012, the bank employees were able to give the police a fairly good description of the teenage girl who pulled off the crime and the car in which she escaped. As it turned out, the investigators really didn't need those descriptions because the thief recorded a YouTube video titled "Chick Band Robber," boasting of her criminal prowess. She actually laid the money out on the bed, and showed people and talked about the fact that she was going to repay her student loans and she was going to go shopping the next day. She actually put that on YouTube. She was proud of what she'd done. And I think sometimes another prison that we live with in our life is our own pride. We like people to know that we've done things. We like folks to know that we're able to accomplish things, sometimes even if they're bad things, or even if they're negative things, or even if they're very non-constructive kind of things. And you can also get in these situations where you're not about to let go of your pride. You know, you worked hard to accomplish this. Or you put in a great deal to be at this particular point in time, and nobody's going to take that away, and nobody's going to destroy that. Or you made the suggestion, it's a good suggestion. You gave the answer, it was the right answer, and no matter what happens, you're going to defend that, and you're going to hold that up. And our pride can easily get into our way. It can be very, very destructive. In 1986, there were two boats, Russian boats, that crashed into each other in the Black Sea. 398 people drowned in that accident. And later on, when they did the investigation, they found that there was no equipment failure. There was no mechanical failure of any kind. There was no bad weather. It simply had to do with two boat captains who refused to yield to the other one. And all the way to a collision that took all these lives. And we look at that and we say, boy, that is so silly. Who could do that? And yet over and over again in life, we see people, maybe sometimes it's ourselves. We're hanging on to something. We're not about to back down. We're going to be the right one. We're not going to yield to anybody. And the disaster that follows that can be very extreme. It can be painful in a lot of people's lives. James chapter 2, verse 12. Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. Pride. We play into pride. Did you hear about the clever car salesman who closed hundreds of sales with this line? Let me show you something several of your neighbors said you couldn't afford. We have pride, and frequently it causes us a lot of problems. The third prison that I would suggest this morning is just the prison of self. We live in a world where we have the opportunity to indulge our self-interest, and that's a great thing. You know, if we want to watch a football game, we can watch a football game. If we want to watch a basketball game, if we want to go to a certain place, and we're blessed to have opportunities to indulge ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that, except when we do, Satan always gets us to do more. When Terry and I were first married, her grandfather had passed away, but her grandmother was still living, and I was watching an NFL game one Sunday afternoon, and I was trying to just make conversation with her grandmother, and I said to her, I said, Mom, did Pop watch football on Sunday afternoons? And she said, Pop worked in the afternoons. Living at a different time in a different place, and she didn't like the fact that people were sitting and watching television on a Sunday afternoon. That was too self-indulgent. This was a man who pulled himself up literally, and that was a great compliment to what he was able to do. And when we find ourselves at a place where we are now, where we have the opportunity to do that, we need to recognize that it hasn't been very long, even in our own country, where that wasn't always the situation. We're blessed to be able to do things that we personally enjoy doing. But certainly we have to keep some kind of a balance there. Across this country, we've seen disasters. And one of the things that happens in disasters is people respond in ways that are incredible. The stories that you hear coming out of South Texas, the sacrifices that people have made, the contributions that other people have made, remind us of the fact that it's really good for us to get out of ourselves. It's really helpful for us to do things for other people. It's beneficial to extend ourselves, and God has given us that opportunity to do that. Are you almost disgusted with life, little man? I'll tell you a wonderful trick that will bring you contentment if anything can. Do something for somebody quick. Are you awfully tired with play, little girl, weary, discouraged, and sick? I'll tell you the loveliest trick in the world. Do something for somebody quick. And the point goes on and on. We feel like, and Satan helps us to try to feel like, boy, if I can do what I want to do, then I'm going to be happy. And yet life teaches us that when we do things for other people, we feel happy. When we serve others, we find satisfaction and we find fulfillment. And instead of being caught in the prison of self, we're giving of ourselves and doing things that are positive, not just for the world, not just for the kingdom, but things that benefit us. The last prison I'd like to share quickly is the prison of addiction. I went to Brahms Thursday night to buy a few items and had Thunder gear on. I was wearing a Thunder shirt and a Thunder hat. And the lady who was checking out said, you're a Thunder fan, aren't you? And I said, yeah. She said, I've only been to one Thunder game. And she said, I didn't get to see all of that. So I kind of had to hear that story. You didn't get to see the whole game? She said, no, we sat too close to the bar. And my honey had too much to drink. And when the mascot came up the aisle, my honey decided he was going to talk to the mascot. Well, the mascot didn't want to talk, so he grabbed him by the hand to keep him there so he could tell him the story. And of course, security and police came and they threw them out of the ball game. And she was really disappointed. And the reality is, when she was telling that story, is she was not just telling a Thunder story. She was saying, there's a person in my life who has a problem. And that addiction causes problems for me as well. There are people in our world who have problems with not only alcohol, but they have problems with chemicals. There are people who are addicted to games. There are people who are addicted to pornography. Folks who are addicted to all kinds of things. And addiction walls us in and keeps us from the life that we would really like to have. Now, probably some of you are sitting there thinking, this doesn't apply to people at church. And it would be good if it didn't, but it does. We're still people, and we still have weaknesses. And as much as we would like to conquer our addictions, there are still folks here who are dealing with those things and trying to battle them. Some perhaps who have lost that battle. And this morning I want to say more than anything else, God cares about that addiction in your life. He has resources that will help you. There are people who can be beneficial to you in dealing with those particular issues and those particular things. It takes a lot of courage to admit that you have an addiction. But at the same time, it opens so many doors and provides so many opportunities. Well, moving hastily toward my conclusion, how was the jailer set free? John chapter 8, verse 36. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. If you're looking for freedom, the place you find freedom is in Jesus. If you want to be free from your guilt, if you want to be free from your pride, if you want to be free of yourself and your own self-interest, if you want to try to lay down the addictions that are impacting your life in a variety of areas and ways, the answer to that is a spiritual answer. Now, there may be techniques and there may be strategies that the world provides that can be useful in that process, but the ultimate answer is Jesus. Let me share with you one more story. In his book, 40 Days, Alton Gansky relates this story. Harry Houdini made a name for himself by escaping from every possible confinement, from straitjackets to multiple pairs of handcuffs clasped to his arms. He boasted that no jail cell could hold him. Time and again, he would be locked in a jail cell, only to reappear minutes later. It worked every time but one. He accepted an invitation to demonstrate his skill. He entered the cell wearing his street clothes, and the jail door swung shut. Once alone, he pulled a thin but strong piece of metal from his belt and began working the lock. But something was wrong. No matter how hard Houdini worked, he couldn't unlock the lock. For 2 hours, he applied skill and experience to the lock, but failed time and time again. 2 hours later, he gave up in frustration. The problem? Many of you know, the cell door was never locked. And that's what's going on in our lives. We want desperately to get out, and God says, the door's not locked. The prison door's not locked. The prison door is open. And this morning, through God's resources and God's forgiveness and God's love, we can walk free of the things that restrict us and hold us and bind us and limit us. This morning, if you need to access the freedom that's available in Christ, we invite you to do that while we sing the song together.